I'm Aisling Keenan and you're listening to Every Mum the Podcast, now in its 13th season and supported by Waterwipes, the number one baby wipe brand in Ireland, made with simply two ingredients and nothing else. When I had my daughter, I wanted something I could trust to use on her skin, and Waterwipes were and still are the one. I once made the mistake of trying a different brand and never again. I didn't realise just how much of a difference there could be between two fairly similar brands, but it was huge. My daughter is now almost three, and I still panic if I don't have at least one pack of water wipes within line of sight. With that in mind, I'm happy to say that this season is supported by that most essential of products for every mum, water wipes. Winners of seven National Parenting Product Awards 2023, including Best Baby Wipes and Best Baby Newborn Essential, they are ideal for delicate newborn skin. Together, we are committed to providing more support for parents with trusted products and this podcast. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Every Mum, the podcast with me, Aisling Keenan. I am delighted to say the guest this week is Shannon Bullman-Joyce, who you might know or has previously been known on social media as Big C and Me, because she used her platform initially to document her cancer journeys. So over the course of her relatively short adult life, just in the past 10 years, she has been diagnosed with and survived cancer three times. She is now the healthiest she's ever been and is thriving and living her life as a single mother to her daughter, Roisin. So we chatted about everything from health anxiety and mom guilt to what it was like having to explain to her daughter that she and her daughter's dad were no longer together. We also talk about the difficulties around being a parent and also being sick, even with a more minor illness, and the guilt that comes with that. I am so thrilled I finally got to chat to Shannon, as I had followed her for a long time online, and she really is one of the most genuinely inspirational people you could come across. So I hope you enjoy, and I'll chat to you next week. So, Shannon Joyce, I'm so glad to finally be speaking to you, because we have orbited each other online for a really long time, haven't we?
Yeah, like when you sent me the email, I was like, oh my God, this is such full circle. Because Aisling, I used to follow you on Snapchat.
Back in the day,
like for like years and years and years, like, and Snapchat's even like a thing anymore. And then I was like, oh my gosh, like I could not believe it, because it's so mad. Like I followed you for years and years, like love the pod, like all of this, love the clips, like love the page. It's just, yeah, no, it's crazy. Oh, thank you for having me. I'm like,
delighted. No, I'm so delighted. And like, likewise, I mean, I've been following you and I've followed your story and all that kind of stuff. But I think for anyone who might not follow you, who might be new to you and is only hearing from you for the first time here, do you want to give us a bit of background? Because you've had quite a story, and it's, you know, obviously now we're going to talk about you as a mother and parenting your daughter and stuff like that. But just from the very beginning, kind of take us through how you kind of came to build your profile online and all that, like, involved.
5 years, and it's mad because I was only thinking the other day, like, how long am I on Instagram? It feels like 2 or 3 years, but actually I started it in July of 2019. So like, it's been like 5 years. It's been a long time. So basically, the background and the whole story for people who don't know me and people who do know and follow the story are probably like, oh my God, this again. Like, because it's just, you know, it's kind of like what my world has revolved around, like my whole adult life almost. So I got cancer when I was 19. Now, this was back in 2014. Like, Instagram wasn't really a thing. Like, I didn't do any social media. So that was fine. I got through that. Then I actually went on, luckily and thankfully, I had my daughter Roisin 2 years later. So at that point, like my oncology team, we didn't know if I actually could have kids or not. But because I was 19 when I was diagnosed, fertility wasn't like a thing that was he disgusting.
Wasn't even, yeah, it wasn't even on your
nah,
mind.
Nah, like, it was just kind of like my biggest thing then was like my long blonde hair. You know, like it's just it's so different from when you're like a teenager. And like at 19, you know, I knew everything. I knew better than everyone.
Yeah.
And looking back, like I was a baby. You know, I was only a baby entering this world of illness. So got through it. That was fine. Met Roisin's dad and actually fell pregnant pretty quickly. I met like one of his sisters and I was pregnant already. So like it was very quick. But now looking back, I'm like, that obviously happened for a reason because now I am infertile. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like she was kind of sent to us and she was given to me because I've always wanted to be a mom. Okay. So yeah, had cancer at 19, beat it, great. Had Roisin, like, you know, just normal. Myself and her dad were working like our 9 to 5s. I was in the office, he was in the construction world, you know, collecting her from childcare, all that crack. And then I felt a lump again in July of 2019.
Okay. So what type of cancer was it the first time around?
The non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So it's a blood cancer. And it's been the same cancer every time. So this is a little bit wild, right? So every time I've been diagnosed, it's because I found a lump in my left groin every time. And I've been diagnosed 3 times July. So July 2014, July 2019, July 2020.
That is mental.
Mental. So like it's so weird, like, you know, the way it's just now, it's coincidence, whatever you want to call it, but
big coincidence though, big to be fair.
So July 23, like last July was really challenging and I was I hate July. It's really triggering for me, but I got through that one then, so I'm like, right, bring on July, let's like I'm going on a sun holiday this July, you know. It's just, so like life is so much different now compared to back then. I was 24 then when I was diagnosed the second time. And at that point, like, I didn't have social media. I loved following people on social media and, like, always, like, loved the idea of doing it, but never had a reason to. Does that make... Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, never really had a reason. Like, I'm from a really small town, very much, like, afraid of what people will think or say, afraid of, like, being laughed at almost. You know, things whereas now, as a 29-year-old, I'm like, don't give a shit. Do what you want to do. Like, you know, take the chance. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, I remember I was actually on my way home from a hospital appointment and I was on the dual carriageway in Cork, coming down from Cork to Yall. Mm-hmm. And I put up saying, like, to my 400 followers at the time, would people be interested if I documented this cancer journey on here? Purely kind of like for my friends and my family. And one of the main reasons I wanted to do it, Aisling, was because I couldn't remember having cancer when I was 19, because this was from like 19 to now being 24.
Yeah.
And I was like, how bad was this? Or what happens during that? Or, you know, the kind of and I couldn't remember the process. I couldn't remember the truth, like, distinctively, you know? So I was like, I'd like to kind of, you know, almost journal it. Like,
for yourself.
For myself and like literally my friends and family. Mm. So anyway, long story short, put it up. I think the poll was like 99% to 1 to do it. So I was like, feck it, I'll just do it. I was like, I don't really care. Like, I'll do it. So I did. And it just started me chatting into my phone. Like, you know, today I have my PET scan and this is the result of that. And then I'm starting treatment next week. And, you know, it was just literally documenting it. And basically it was kind of like big influencers like Rosie Connolly, you know, shared the page. Like, I was, you know, people were kind of sharing my page. And at the time it was Big C and Me. So people were sharing it and then people were following. And I'll never forget hitting 10K. And I was in Super Value car park. And I was like, 10,000 people. I was like, and do you remember you needed 10,000 to do the swipe up link?
Yes. Yeah.
And I was like, I can do swipe up links. Like, I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is crazy. So like, that was grand. Like, you know, kind of kept tipping away at it. I went in for, like, I was having my chemo. I would document all of that, kind of tips and tricks on, you know, because I'd had like a Hickman line put in, I'd pick lines put in and, like, you know, tricks and what I would do to not get them wet. And like basic kind of like going through cancer journey, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But at that time I actually did go for some fertility treatment because I had to have a transplant, so a bone marrow transplant, and it was going to leave me like completely infertile. So I had like a 2-3 week window to be able to do some fertility where I harvested some eggs. Okay. So yeah, basically that, like, that journey I honestly think was probably harder than the chemo at that point. I found that really, really challenging. Like, I emotions, hormones, and, you know, the whole like injecting yourself every day, I just found it really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. So anyway, like, met a gynecologist up in the Rotunda, and I remember him saying to me, like, you know, you're young, and besides cancer, like, you're fit, you're healthy, you get a regular period, you've had a daughter naturally, so, like, yeah, you know, this should be no problem.
Yeah,
we'd be hoping to get, like, you know, double digit amount of,
yeah, rake of eggs.
Eggs, and yeah, I was like, yeah, amazing, like, you know, yeah, put them on ice and I'll use them for the future.
Yeah,
so long story short, after the couple of days, and anyone who's kind of gone through that journey will know, you know, that they'll call you on your 2 day and say, you know, you've got this many left, and then they'll call you on your day 3 and say, this many made it to this stage. And basically, anyway, only one egg actually survived the 7 day process. So, like, that hit me really hard, because I, you know, it was always in my head going, if I ever want to use that egg, like, I've only got one chance. Yeah. And, you know, if
kind of, yeah,
it's one chance and that's all it is.
Yeah.
So at the time, the gynecologist said, like, you know, you can leave it as an egg, mm-hmm, and then use it in years to come with any sperm.
Yeah.
Or for it to be a better quality egg, you can what's the word I'm looking for?
Fertilize it now.
Fertilize it now. Like, I was with Roisin's dad at that stage for like a couple of years. So I was like, oh yeah, fertilize it, like, fine. So that's challenging at the moment, because I know that I've got one and it's actually still there and I know it'll never be used. And that's my only chance of ever being a mom again.
Mm.
And that is something that I'm like, that, yeah, that's something that one of the hardest things I found in the breakup, to be honest, because, you know, for him, he can have another family, he can have more kids, whereas that was kind of like my only chance. And then I was kind of going, oh my God, why didn't I just leave it as an egg? And but, you know, at the time, you do what's best for you
at the time. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. And at the time, that's what was going to make the most sense. And we obviously never anticipated, like, breaking up, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
of course, yeah.
Yeah. So look, we did that. And that's just something that's going to, I'll cross that bridge when it comes to it, because, you know, you'll get the email after a couple of years saying, you know, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to pay the fee and keep it on ice, or do you want to discard it?
Yeah,
and I'll deal with that when it comes. But that's something that definitely I struggle with, like, a lot, because
of course.
I do want more kids. You know, I do want to have another child, one, maybe two. And I've said, if I haven't met somebody by the age of 35, like, I'll get a donor. I'll get an egg donor and a sperm donor, and I'll carry the child myself, because there's so many ways now of, like, expanding your family. Do you know, it's not like however long ago where it was just, you know, the man and the woman, the husband, the wife. Like, there's so many other ways, and there's fostering and adoption. So those are all things that I will definitely think about, like, down the line. But for now, it's just me and Roisin, and, like, she's like my best little pal, and you probably know yourself, like, the older they get, and, like, you know, now she's coming home with, like, stories from school, and, like, the chats and the debriefs every night before going to sleep. And, like, yeah, we're just like two little best friends. And she was 2 when I got diagnosed, we'd say the second time.
Yeah,
so that was fine. Had the transplant that was in Dublin, like, was away from her for 9 weeks that time. And because you're not, like, it's so severe, if somebody brought in, like, even a sniffle or a cough or a cold, like, it could genuinely kill, because you've got no immune system.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see her for like 9 weeks. And then that was fine, like, moved home, life was kind of starting to get back to normal. And then COVID hit in the March.
Yeah.
But we had been isolating ourselves kind of before that, the three of us, because my immune system was so low. So even when, like, my ex used to go to Tesco, he'd have to, like, wear a mask and stuff. And people used to be kind of looking at him.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it was kind of not normal to us, but we were kind of, like, ahead of the times, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, we started the mask trend.
Yeah.
So then the following July, so it was only like 7 months after the transplant, I relapsed. And it was the same thing again, like, just had a pain in my left groin, found a lump, went up to, and I have to shout out Professor O'Reilly, Seamus O'Reilly. He is an oncologist in Cork, and like, he is just the most amazing man, and like, he has saved my life so many times. And you know, I've known him for 10 years now. Like, my whole kind of adult life has been illness, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to kind of come away from that now. And you know, just because I have so much more to give and I have so much more to offer than just like being the girl with cancer. You know? So I suppose, yeah, I relapsed then, another 8 sessions of chemo. And this was like really, this was the hardest chemo. It was called brentuximab. It was horrible. It was just horrible. So like, this is the third time losing my hair. And it's so funny because being diagnosed at 19, and your hair being like, you know, oh my God, I'm going to lose my hair, to then being diagnosed at 25, having a 3-year-old being like, you know, you don't give a shit about the hair or nothing. You're like, you know, I just need to get better. Like, I need to get better because I need to be here for her. So another long road. Had another transplant then the following February, but this time I actually had to move to Dublin. So I was in the hospital for like 11 weeks, I think. And then I had to like live in Dublin for 3 months afterwards. Okay. So that was really confusing for her because like, we're 3 hours from Dublin. So she was like coming up after preschool with her dad, staying maybe like the Friday and Saturday, and then like heading away again on the Sunday. And my mom was living with me up in Dublin. And then my dad was literally there morning, noon. I couldn't get rid of, you know, like, I just have the most amazing family. We really do. And they were so supportive. And but she kind of really struggled with that, you know, like, she's only a baby, like, she couldn't understand. And like, couldn't understand why, like, I was staying up in Dublin with Nan and Granddad, or, you know, why was she going back down home with Dad? So anyway, long story short, I got back down home in the April, May. But COVID was still kind of a thing. But you know, and then the following year, life was kind of just getting back to normal. Her life was getting back to normal. But myself and her dad, we'd gone through too much. Like, it was relationship, really quickly getting pregnant, getting to know each other while being pregnant, having a baby really early on in our relationship, then getting hit with like cancer, transplant, cancer. COVID, like, it was just a lot. And we just fell out of love. Like, there was no bad, nothing bad happened. It's like, you like, know,
even one of those things would test a years long relationship. Like, even 100%. You know, people who'd been together for a decade and they'd go through COVID, or like, we saw it happen so many times. Go through COVID, or
I read all those stats, like the divorce. The amount of divorces, like, you know, doubled or tripled, whatever, during COVID. And like, you can see why, like, it was intense.
100%,
But then, like, me being sick.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It very much went to being kind of like a carer relationship more than boyfriend, girlfriend. Yeah. You know, and it's very hard to come back from that. And we just kind of grew apart. We felt like we did. And to be honest, both of us, and I think he would say the same, we would have stayed together for Roisin. Do you know what I mean? And like, a lot of kind of, you know, I'd spoken to my friends and he'd spoken to his family and stuff, and they were like, you know, it's no excuse. A child is an excuse to stay together, because like, two happy homes is better than one kind of miserable home.
Yeah, of course.
And we spoke about it, and now, like, we really did, like, you know, we were like, can it be fixed? Will we work through it? And it was just, it wasn't. We couldn't. Yeah. Like, we none of us wanted to. Yeah. The only reason we would have stayed together, as I said, would have been for Roisin. Right. And we thought about the long run, and we were like, you know, when she's 18 and 19 and going off to college, and it's the two of us left here, and like, we hate each other, you know. Yeah. So I was like, so we made the decision, and we said, right, we're gonna go our separate ways. And telling her, like, is something that will never, ever, ever leave me. Like, she was very much like, the three of us were like her thing. Like, she just loved her. She loves her dad still, obviously. She loved me. We were her little family. We were her little safe space. And I felt really bad. Like, I felt such mom guilt. Because I felt like I kind of ripped that away from her. And I came from I won't say broken home, because I've a great relationship with both my mom and my dad, but my parents weren't together when I was growing up, and to me it would have been weird if they were. But then his family, his mom and dad are married with 50 years, you know, so both of us came from really separate backgrounds, like different kind of upbringings, and I didn't want for her how I was brought up. Now I had a great childhood, like, not, you know, I seen my dad, I seen my mom, I had a great relationship with both of them, but I just didn't want for her to have to go through that, because there is an element at some point of certain situations where, like, they'll have to choose, you know, who will I spend Christmas with?
Who will
I spend it? And I didn't want that for her. I didn't. And I would have done everything for that not to happen.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, 2 years on, like 2.5 years on, we're so happy. Like, and you can see she's really starting to come back to herself. She is the happy little girl that, like, I know she could have been, but she was for a while. Like, she really did struggle, because, you know, like, that it was kind of like the three of us here, especially then during COVID, it's so much more intense. Spent like every waking minute together. And then it was like her dad moved out. So then she was like, I don't want to be in this house. I hate this house. And, you know, it was just kind of like her way of coping. And she did play therapy, and, like, I've never spoken about that on Instagram, because it's just, you know, it's like, I like to protect her in those senses. Now, I don't mind, like, speaking about it on something like this, because I do think for any mom going through what I have gone through with her, like, it's definitely important to know that, like, there is help out there. And something like play therapy, oh my God, Aisling, the difference in her, like, because you could see, she was really struggling, like, really struggling with missing her dad, like, couldn't understand why, you know, he wasn't here all the time. She did really struggle. So we did start play therapy, and it was the best decision.
Brilliant.
Ever. Like, and you could see she did 16 weeks, and she's actually on a little break now, but she used to love going. You know, it wasn't like she used to love, like, her Wednesdays, she'd, like, go up to her play therapist. She had the best fun, like, and I could see she started learning little, like, coping mechanisms. So, like, you know, the times where she kind of, her thing was frustration. She'd get really frustrated.
Okay.
And it would be almost like, I don't know how to let this out. Yeah, you know, she didn't know, like, how to cope with it.
Yeah.
And I've seen from play therapy, like, she has a little journal, and she writes, like, a lot. Like, she's only 7, but, like, she writes, like, little things in her journal, and that's, like, her little safe space. She's very creative, very artistic. She draws. So, like, you know, when she does feel that, like, frustration or anger or confusion as to why I'm here, her dad isn't.
Yeah.
She literally puts pen to paper. Like, that's how she escapes, I suppose. And that's something she learned from play therapy.
That's an incredible skill to have at such a young age as well. Because
and like, I look at her and I'm in awe, because I'm
it's incredible.
Incredible. And then, like, it's really difficult for her then, because, like, so this is her home, this is where she is 90% of the time, this is where, like, her school is, her activities, her friends, everything. Her dad does live, like, 45 minutes away, so she does see him, like, you know, the weekends, Friday nights, Saturday nights, like, she does go with her dad. But then, like, when she's with her dad, she's like, I don't want to go back to mom. And then when she's with me, she's like, I don't want to go to dad. You know, she's very, like, it's kind of where she is.
Yeah.
She just kind of, you know, she just gets a bit confused by it all. So, like, I definitely do notice that, like, when she kind of comes home, say if she's with her dad for the long weekend, we'd say the Friday and the Saturday. When she comes home on the Sunday, you can tell she's a bit, like, out of sorts. And, you know, she's a bit kind of sad, I suppose. And like, before, she didn't know how to deal with that, and she would, like, lash out. And I used to be like, is she really, really bold? Like, she's like this brazen child, you know. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? Like, why is she so bold? But now I notice a pattern of, like, it's actually only kind of, you know, when she comes back from her dad, and it's just purely because she's sad and she's frustrated. And now she'd, like, take herself into her room, onto her little desk, like, draw or write, or she just has, like, a way of kind of coping with it. And it's really lovely to see her because she's hyper, like she loves singing, loves dancing, she loves putting on the acts and the performances, yeah. and she lost that for a while, like she really right. did, yeah. and it's so lovely as her mom to see that come back and see yeah. the sparkle in her eye and see like the happy-go-lucky, because 7-year-olds shouldn't have to know cancer, they shouldn't have to know what chemo is, they shouldn't yeah. have to see their mom lose their hair, or dad, their anybody in their lives lose their hair twice. Like when I was sick, she, you know, if I couldn't get out of bed because I was so sick, she'd bring toast before going to school, you know, like her dad obviously would help her and she'd bring it up. And a lot, like I had a lot of guilt around that, like being yeah. a sick mother, because I just felt like, you know, she shouldn't have to worry about that. She should have to worry about what games she's going to play in school yeah. or what she's going to do for the weekend or what she wants off Santa, you know, that like yeah. that's what I felt like.
Yeah.
Not that her childhood was robbed from her, but definitely a lot of like the innocent years were taken because she had to grow up quite quickly.
Wow.
And she had to deal with things that I like kids her age
wouldn't typically never. Have to go through. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And like, I don't think they should have. And I had a lot of guilt around that. I really did.
But that, I mean, that was completely out of your control, obviously. And I'm certain that you did everything that you could to make it as happy and safe and pleasant and comfortable as you possibly could for her, yeah, in spite of what you were going through. Yeah,
we did. And like that, you know, if I was having a particularly bad day, her dad might take her away for the day, you know, like yeah. so she wouldn't kind of see me. But
yeah,
you know, it's just, and it's amazing now because I'm so healthy. It's yeah. I mean, like, you know, I didn't bring her to school for like the first year. I was never able to do a school drop because I was in so much pain I couldn't get up in the morning. So like her dad did all that. And I think that's maybe why she struggled so much when he moved out, because he did do so much for her. Yeah. He did, like, he literally, like, I was sick, he did everything for her. Yeah. So it was like, you know, I was almost taking that role over, and, you know, it's different for her, but it's great now because, you know, she'll see me, like, get up, she'll see me do, like, she actually said to me, she's like, "Mom, how many jobs do you have?" I'm always kind of working, or I'm always doing something. And brilliant, you know, it's, and I just love that. And even the other day, like, I painted her room the other day, and I was like, I would have paid someone to come in and do this, but I did it. And it was like, when I told her it was me that did it, and she was like, "Oh my gosh, you do what?" Like, and she was so proud. And she actually said to me, we were going up to the city last week to meet a friend, and the night before we'd done a huge clear out, we were going shopping, so I was like, we need to get rid of all the old clothes, we need to do a big clear out. And I like was moving the wardrobes around, and I was taking furniture out of my room, and I was lifting bags up and down the stairs, and you know, things like that. And she said to me, get up in the car, she was like, "Mom, you do like things that like dads are supposed to do." And I said, "Well, there's not really mom jobs or dad jobs." I said, "If something has to be done." And she said, "I know, but you're so strong doing that." And it's like, I just feel like I'm like doing these things in front of her.
Yeah.
Is setting such a good example of like, you know, she can do these things herself. Yeah. And she has said that, you know, when she came in and saw that I painted the room, and she was like, "Oh, I could paint my room when I'm older." And I was like, "Yeah, you can, you know, like, you can do all of that." Yeah. And I suppose it's kind of gone from one extreme to the other of the lowest point in my life where, you know, I was being showered, like physically couldn't shower myself because I was so unwell and weak, to now redecorating the house. And she has seen both those sides, you know, so a lot for her because she's so small still, but she has like her reports in school every year, different teachers, compassionate, empathetic, kindest, caring. If somebody is, you know, out in the schoolyard on their own, she'll like try to get them involved. She will never leave anybody play on their own. And I see that she's the most loving, like loves hugs, loves kisses. Like she's so empathetic. And I do think that that's like a skill she's learned, or like something that's just been instilled in her from maybe me being sick and seeing that side of things, that she has this lovely, like caring, soft side to her. Now don't get me wrong, like there's an attitude, like she can have
always an attitude in little girls,
isn't there? And I said, it was only last night, I said to her, "Have you your homeless?" She goes, "Brah, come on." And I was like, "Don't brah me." And she was like, "Bro, I just want to watch 5 minutes of TV and relax. You know, so they're like, she still is the like sassy little 7 year old, but she does. She's got like the kindest little heart, and she's what keeps me going. You know, she's the reason I'm so motivated, and the reason that I want to do all these things and accomplish these things.
This podcast is just one way that Every Mum supports you. Another amazing way is our free gift bag, packed full of essentials for you and baby, including free samples of water wipes, the number one baby wipe in Ireland. To receive yours, register now on everymum.ie. There's a free gift bag there waiting for every mum.
Does she ever, do you think, or has she ever said, does she ever worry about you being sick again?
Yeah.
Is that on her mind?
It does. And I've never been one to kind of not lie, I suppose, but I would always be very honest and truthful with her, because I just felt like if I wasn't, like, would have kind of come around at some point and bite me in the ass if I lied about something. And so I still have to take a lot of tablets, you know, like immunosuppressants, I'd be on like anxiety medication. I have PTSD from being sick. I have really bad health anxiety. So I would be on, like, you know, the infertility. So I'm on a HRT. I don't produce my own estrogen. So I'd be on, I think maybe like 9 or 10 tablets in the evenings, 2 in the morning, 9 or 10 in the evenings.
Yeah.
And she'd be with me in the evenings going to bed, because that's when I would take them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So she would see me take them. And she, like I said, why do you still have to take tablets? Why? And I said, because they, you know, that's what keeps me better.
Yeah.
And she'll go, so if you don't take them, will you get sick again?
Mm.
And I, you know, and I'm going, no, I won't get sick again, but I have to get, you know, so she, those kind of little things that she doesn't understand now, she does definitely worry about. And like, if we're in the car and something, you know, like the Irish Cancer Society, and Ad might come on the radio, and she'd be like, oh, ma'am, cancer, that's what you had. And I'd be like, yeah, that's what I had. And then she'd go, will you get cancer again?
Mm.
And I've actually always said to her, I don't think so. But I don't, because I don't want to say no, never, ever, because if it did happen, I wouldn't want her to be like, my mom lied to me. And I'm probably overthinking that. But
no, that's, I think, just, that's a good approach, though, to be fair. Yeah. You don't want to
just
say
to kind of be honest without trying to terrify her. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So, like, I, you know, I've always said to her, like, you know, Roisin, mom was sick, but I'm so much better now. Like, if I, like, if I have scans coming up and things like that, like, she'll know about them.
Yeah.
And I'll tell her, you know, and then I'll be like, my scans came back and mom is still better. Like, I'm not sick. And she, you know, and she does, but she definitely does kind of think about it a bit. She does worry about it.
And you were saying you have health anxiety, which I know is something, particularly after COVID, actually, that a lot of people do have. And a lot of people, I mean, you know, whether they've been sick before or they haven't, they have health anxiety. How, obviously you're taking medication to kind of help with that, but how do you, have you been able to kind of relax into your life knowing that there's, you know, that you had cancer 3 times and who knows in the future? Do you know the kind of way, like, how have you been able to just relax into being a mom? Have you been able to just get back to, you know, who you feel you were before, maybe?
Like, I've definitely gotten better. Like, I have in the last 12 months, I've definitely 100% gotten better, because so my team in Dublin, Dr. Bacon, when I'm in the waiting room and he calls me and he'll go, where are you after finding a lump this time? And it's just like a running joke, because every time I go up, I'm like, it's back. It has to be. I have night sweats. And he's like, okay, it's the height of summer. It's really warm. You know, like, I'm like, no, like, I'm really tired. And he's like, you're a single mom with your own business and an office job. And you do Instagram on the side. That's why you're tired. You know, and it, like, he's all, like, he just kind of, and I'm like, all right, okay. But for a long, long time, like, it was excessive. I would like lock myself in the bathroom and I would check, like, and I'm a huge advocate for like checking your body, knowing your body. Yeah. So when you do, if you do find something that, you know, okay, right, this wasn't there last week. Yeah. This is there now. Keep an eye on it. Yeah. If it's there next month, I'll go, you know?
Yeah.
So I've definitely gotten better at it, but like, it's so triggering, Ashley. Like, I have a lump in my neck and it's actually there 18 months at the start. And it's so funny, because my cancer was never in my neck. The highest it ever came up to was actually my chest, the lymph nodes in my chest, never my neck. But I just have like a lump here.
Hmm.
And for the first couple of months, I was like, it needs to be biopsied. And my team in Cork would be like, we've biopsied it.
Yeah,
it's fine. And then like, I'm like, it's gotten bigger. And they're like, it actually hasn't. And you know, I like now I'll feel it and it doesn't give me the
panic that
I usually get. And it's normal for people to actually have like enlarged lymph nodes because they're supposed to kind of swell if you're fighting an infection and things like that.
Course,
but because mine has always been lymphoma, they do kind of, they do worry me, but I'm definitely, like, I go to CBT, so cognitive behavioral therapy. Changed my life. Like, I've been in counselling 8 or 9 years, I think, like, and I've tried, like, different approaches to counselling. But about 2.5 years ago, I started with a CBT. So it has changed my life. She puts things quite logically, like, so you know, I put on my logical brain instead of the overthinking, like, worst case scenario brain that I usually have. And then I had my smear a year ago and honestly was like, this will be fine, you know, because I'm tested so much, like, I have scans every couple of months, like, I'm absolutely fine, like, I'm grand. And it came back that I had like the highest grade of precancerous cells, so like the SYN3 precancerous cells, and I was like, oh my god. So literally for like a month I was like, has to be cervical, like, I definitely have it, like, a 100% I know it's going to be, like, just straight away into the negative, like, thinking. And I try not to go there, like, I genuinely try to be as positive as I can. So like, I had the, you know, the less treatment where they burn the cells off. Like, I had that there, like, and I was like, is it cancer, like, does that mean that, like, I have cancer? And they were like, no, it's
no,
they're precancerous cells, like, thankfully you've gotten your smear when you should have. If you didn't, they would have progressed, but because we're treating them now, it'll be fine. So then I went for like my routine, well, the smear after then to make sure they got it all. And then they rang and they said, look, it didn't work fully. You need to come back for more treatment. 6 months ago, I would have been like up to 90. Oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. But honestly, she told me, I was like, oh, that's fine. Like, you know, it's, and I think it's just about kind of where you put your mindset and how you think about things. It's like, okay, if I didn't go back for the routine smear, it could have been a totally different phone call in 2 years' time. But I did, and it's not, and we can fix it, and it will be fine. But there is definitely an element of fear, I suppose. And I think that's probably gotten worse since becoming a single mom. Because it's like, you know, it's just me now. And I can't be sick.
I think that's something that a lot of mothers, I think in mothers in particular, I don't know, I haven't spoken to as many fathers about it, because most of my pals are women, and I'd be chatting to them about being mothers and stuff. And one of the things that is we all seem to have in common is that sense of, you know, your health always mattered. My health, I was always aware of my health and conscious of it and stuff. But after I became a mother, I was like, oh, I have a reason, not that you didn't have a reason before to be healthy and stay alive as long as possible, but you literally have a walking, talking dependent that needs
human. Like, you have that somebody that like needs 100%.
So it did amp up my health anxiety. And I remember I was having pains in my kind of abdomen and stuff, and I went for a scan. And so my grandmother passed away from ovarian cancer, and they found, when I went for the scan, they found a cyst on my ovary the size of an orange. And I remember that day being like, oh my god, this is it now. I've got a tiny baby, and what, you know, and you really do, like, it doesn't take much to spiral into very, very worst case scenario. And that's 100%, me speaking as someone who has been, you know, very lucky to not have gone through something like what you've gone through, which is multiple, you know, cancer diagnoses over the years. Like, and I straight away was like, oh my god, what is my baby gonna do, you know? And that's, it's an even more crystallized version of health anxiety when you've got a child to care for. Obviously my cyst was fine, and it was benign or water filled or whatever it was, and I think it's like she's still in there in whatever shape or size. And I'm, you know, I keep an eye on things, but I did, I did genuine, like, I think it was because of Lydia. I was like,
oh, you do. You spiral and like, yeah, you go, yeah, you automatically go to like worst case scenario.
Worst case,
and
you're, yeah,
like, I'll write my will now. I'll write, yeah, what I want, you know, and, yeah, and you do like 100%. It's, but I think it's hard not to when you're a, yeah, when you're a parent, you know, and like you, yeah, said, you know, don't speak to fathers about it. Like, yeah, I'd be the same with my girls. Like, they, yeah, like the majority of my friends all have young babies and they'd all be the same. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's not that the dads aren't around or that they're not there, but it's,
no,
it's just kind of different. It's like
different. It's, yeah, it's different.
It's just like I'm their mom and I'm the one who needs to, you know, yeah, protect them and be there. And,
yeah,
like you said, you know, you're responsible for like this walking, talking, yeah, human that, yeah, depends on you.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, what, you know, even like if you got sick, like if you'd like a chest infection or something, yeah, and you were down for a couple of days, like, you, it's like, personally, I feel like an element of guilt.
Yeah.
And like that I'm letting her down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like it's kind of like if something like cancer was to come around, then it's like, what would you do?
Yeah.
What, you know, and that's kind of sometimes where I would spiral now, because, yeah, anytime I, like the two times that I've had it while Roisin was born, I was with her dad. So, you know, I was kind of like, no, it's cool. I, yeah, you know, he's, yeah, here. Yeah. What, you know, whereas now I'm like,
yeah,
she's exactly. And the thing is, if I got sick again, she would still be looked after. But in my head, I'm like, would she have to move in with her dad? Like, would, yeah, you know, what? It's like all it's a totally different way of thinking about being sick now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you, I definitely can kind of spiral sometimes, and that's when then my anxiety would get really bad. And that's actually then when I would be like struck down with, you know, migraines and things like that, yeah, is when I kind of work myself up. So
yeah,
I'm definitely working on it. But like health anxiety, it's horrific. Like it really is, because you could have nothing. You could be the healthiest person in the world, and once you get into your mind, if you really get in there, you know,
yeah, you could diagnose yourself with anything.
Exactly. And you've got, yeah, 6 weeks to live, and yeah, that's, yeah, the, yeah, end of that.
Yeah.
And there could,
yeah,
be nothing at all wrong. Do you know, yeah, what I mean? So, yeah, like, it's definitely something that, like, I try my best to manage.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And so now that you're a single mom, and you're co-parenting with Roisin's daddy, are you guys like, how are you handling that, basically? Are you, do you feel like you're managing okay? Are you, you know,
yeah,
are you happy?
Like honestly, I'm very happy for, like, I'm very content for the first time, and this is so mad, right? I'm 29, and So after myself and Roisin's dad split up, I did meet somebody else. I was with him for maybe 11 or 12 months, and that ended like late last year.
Okay.
And I took that really, really bad. Like, really bad. Like, I was devastated, heartbroken. So we'd say, what's that, seven or 8 months ago?
Yeah.
This is the longest I've actually been single my adult life.
Yeah,
I've got, like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, you know, and I'm like, this is the last year of my
20s. Yeah.
Focus on me and Roisin and nothing else. I always felt like I needed, like, to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't even know where or why it kind of came from that. Maybe because, you know, my mom was a single mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never seen her, like, in relationships. So it's like, you know, maybe it's something like that kind of triggering, being like, you have to be in a relationship, you have to be in a relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And I almost would have, like, kind of jumped from when I was younger, like, you know, yeah, if one ended, like, I, you know, but now I'm just like really actually enjoying being on my own, yeah, and not actually looking for anything, and just focusing on me and Roisin and nothing else. And it's like the sense of independence of, you know, not being in a relationship. But I suppose the co-parenting thing, it's hard. Like, sometimes, like, at the start it was a novelty. So if she was going to be gone on a Friday night, I'd be like, oh my God, like, I can go out and I can,
yeah,
you know, without having to worry about, yeah, like, you know, getting
hair
up in the morning.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And, but that wears off. And it's like, sometimes then if I work from the office on a Friday, if I got home at, we'd say, 6 p.m. and then the house is so quiet, and then, yeah, I'm like, oh my God, I'm on my own. it can kind of hit.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
like that it yeah. does. Like it, I do struggle, but like I suppose it's weird. Like me and her, we were together for nearly 8 years. Like we went through a lot in those 8 years, and now we're just like. It's not bad. Like it's not like we don't argue. We don't like we're not like at each other's throats, but we just don't speak.
Yeah.
So
that's a big change from
it is. And like, you know, obviously when the handover and you know, if he's collecting her or if I'm dropping her or whatever, you know, whatever we need to talk about Roisin was talked about. Yeah. But yeah, I suppose it's weird, like essentially we're strangers, you know. I know nothing about his life now. He knows nothing about mine, do you know? So yeah, no, that like that is it was kind of hard to adjust to that. But as I said, like, so how long after was it? It was probably 8 months, 9 months after we broke up I met somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that long, kind of on my own almost.
I know what you mean.
Which is why I kind of need this time now to really be on my own and really just figure out who I am as a person and figure out what I want and what I need. Mm-hmm. And it's just like it can be lonely, like it really can, but then it can be also really rewarding as well, figuring out like what I would never stand for in another relationship and what is normal and what's not normal. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it is weird going from living with somebody for 8 years, having a child together, to now having two totally separate lives.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he has moved on, like, you know, and like I know kind of nothing about that. And even like his family and stuff, like I would still have quite a good relationship with his mom and dad. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, not really knowing what's going on or you know anything, like, you know,
it feels weird, doesn't it? Like I think that about my exes, like, you know someone so intimately and so deeply and so, you know, everything about their life and what they do from day to day, and then all of a sudden you don't at all. Like it's bizarre, someone
asked me recently, like, where was he working? And I
don't know.
Like, I actually don't know. Like, I was like, I really, really don't. I was like, it's so weird going from that to, and sometimes I'd see like pictures on social media, like if one of his family members would put up something and it's like, you know, like him, his new partner, you know, are there.
It's
and
so
it's
weird.
Like, it's just weird. And it's not like a jealousy or like, oh, I wish I was there, because we genuinely, both of us, like, we didn't want to be with each other. It wasn't like I broke up with him or he broke up with him. We both were very much like, we don't want this anymore. Yeah. Like, you know, we're not happy.
Yeah.
But I suppose when you break up with someone, then you're breaking up with the whole family. And like, that's what I would find. Yeah. Like we'd go over to his mom's for like Sunday dinner, and like me and his mom might share a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And it could be like 9 o'clock and we would have been walking back, because like we're literally like 2 minute walk like from his home house, we'd say. And like, you know, it's things like that then that you'd almost miss. And it's those things that those are the things that I find weird, is like, you know, the fact that I actually don't know anything about this man or his family his day-to-day life anymore, when we literally lived in each other's pockets. Like, as I said, like, it went from very much him kind of being like my carer. Like, I used to have to help me shower, brush my hair, get dressed, because I was so sick. So it was like, you know, it did go from like
relationship
and I did struggle with that a lot, but like, we both knew we weren't happy.
We both
and like everyone else around us also knew as well.
So
we know, we definitely know we made the right decision, like 100% made the right decision. And questioned it a lot at the start when Roisin was struggling. And we were almost kind of like, would we just get back together for her? You know, and like, you know, that was, I actually did think about that. You know, I was like, I would get back together if it was going to help or fix her. But I just knew, like, in years, we'd come to resent each other. She'd pick up on it.
Yes.
And I do think two happy homes is so much better than one miserable home. And now, thankfully, like a couple of years on, I can hand in my heart, say it was the right decision. Yeah, it was.
No, the right decision. I think definitely the right decision. But I also think that like there's an adjustment period for her, mm-hmm. and that will obviously happen. But I think down the line in years to come, she'll be much better off for that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And having
like when she knows, you know what I mean?
When she understands more.
Yeah, she doesn't understand that now. No. She doesn't understand, like, you know, she doesn't understand about, you know, relationships and mom and dad aren't happy together. Like, she doesn't get it.
No.
You know, she wouldn't have seen arguments, or she wouldn't have, she doesn't understand that now. But I know in years to come she will get it, you know, and that's comforting to know that she won't always be sad about it. Yeah. Well, you know, obviously she's going to be sad about it because she did go from having the family unit to not having it. I suppose I never actually had the family unit. I was so young, like I don't remember ever. So
parents
like
being together,
ever remember it. I would find it weird. Like, you know, I don't remember that at all. So I suppose I can't relate to having it and it being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to like have had that family unit and then for it to be kind of gone. And I suppose it was just so strange for her from the years prior as well, you know, as I said, for me being up in Dublin for long periods of time and her being down here with her dad. And so it was just like, it was a lot for her. Like it was really confusing, but as I said, like she's really starting to kind of come back into her own now. And she's, you know, the confidence is really starting to grow. She's, she is.
Well, listen, with a mother like you, with the strength and the resilience and the bravery that you have in spades, like she won't go far wrong. And I'm sure her dad is absolutely brilliant as well and will make sure that you guys both do exactly what's best for her the whole way along. Thank you, Shannon. This was just the loveliest chat. I'm so delighted that we got to
I feel like I've just rambled for like the last hour.
Oh, no, but listen, I would listen to you ramble all day and be very happy about it. It was brilliant to hear the story, and it's so wonderful to hear a kind of, you know, successful single mom story and that you're making things work and that it's not always easy for you, but you're doing the best for your daughter. And that is really all we can do, I suppose, at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
So thank you. Thank you so much. Ash,
thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. And of course, to Water Wipes, the number one baby wipe brand in Ireland, for their support. Water Wipes Original are made with just two ingredients, 99.9% water and a drop of fruit extract. And they are plant-based and plastic-free wipes. If you enjoyed this conversation, subscribe, rate, or we would love if you could leave a review. Share this episode across social if you want, and get in touch with this week's guest.